FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz, and it's 2-6-19 already. And as time is moving forward, so is the trend, so is the juggernaut. I'm talking about finally cannabis getting legalized, accepted throughout the country. I think we've got 9 or 10 states where recreational use is legal, and we've got a bunch more where medical is allowed, but you ain't seen nothing yet. It's a trend in the United States. It's a trend around the world. Legalization. We've kind of come to our collective senses, I believe. And you're about to hear from Dan Anglin. He runs CanAmerica Brands. And Dan, it's great to have you on. A few years ago, if you said I'd be interviewing cannabis company executives, I would have told you you're insane. But here we are in 2019, and it's now there's a cannabis gold rush. The legalization is moving rapidly forward.
Yes, it is. And in fact, in 2011, when I first got into this industry, if I would have had a conversation with somebody about my future as a cannabis executive, I would have said the same exact thing you just did. So thank you.
So you've been involved with the space for a long time, going back to Colorado. And look, we all, you know, kind of grew up around the same time. The majority of the country's citizens have tried it at one time or another, and yet the resistance against legalization has been so unreal, especially when you consider that alcohol, which at one time was subject to prohibition, causes far greater harm than cannabis ever has. Don't you find that shocking?
I used to. Some of my colleagues who run other industries, we've got this Facebook game called Spot the Hypocrisy, right? So, you know, Disneyland just created its very first bar on the property. So that's interesting that, you know, all of the regulations around cannabis are about preventing children from even hearing about it or thinking about it or seeing it or being exposed to anybody who's consuming it. And now we've got a bar in Disneyland. And 2 days later, Disney introduced their first alcohol popsicle. And so, again, I'm pretty used to the hypocrisy. I think the American people are ready for a change in the policy. And we're certainly ready as an industry to be able to streamline what we do and not have to make the state by state mountain of investments for individual businesses if you want to have products that are, you know, from your company on the shelves. In New Jersey, you got to be in New Jersey. If you want it on the shelves in Colorado, you got to be in Colorado. So there's no, you know, way for the current industry to scale up for national distribution until the feds say yes. And that's really the difference between licensed producers in Canada and the way the businesses are being created in the United States is while everybody would like to have the biggest facility that can handle that the moment that Congress and the president say we can, it's not that wise of an investment. So I think a lot of folks are, you know, starting to prepare their business models for that moment. But we have to live in the now, and we have to live with the prohibitions, and we have to live with the strict regulations. So it's really an art form and a ballet dance of taking a concept that's a good one, if you've got one, and raising the money for all of the regulatory permitting, et cetera, and then having the kind of business where regulations can change on a moment's notice, some kind of news comes out, and, you know, they certainly don't let the industry do self-regulation like they do alcohol and tobacco and pharmaceuticals. No. Yeah. So we look forward to those days, right, where you know, the folks who've been doing this since the beginning are in the driver's seat, and there's still room for plenty of people with great ideas to bring, you know, that kind of value to the industry and the consumers.
Yeah, that's a great point. And imagine if McDonald's in every state, they were subject to a different regulation on selling Big Macs. So in Washington State, it had to be topped with alfalfa sprouts. In California, you could only serve Big Macs on whole wheat, multigrain bread. And it would make it impossible for McDonald's to exist in its present state. So in a way, this is good because it's keeping the big guys out of the space. But then again, on the other hand, all these technical issues, legal issues, really favor the big guys because they've got armies of lawyers, so they can hire a different high-powered law firm in every state that they need to get a permit and move ahead like that. So as far as your strategy for branding and from branding, building value and generating profits, where are you right now?
That's a very good question. So, you know, I started my career with the very first cannabis edibles company. In fact, it was the first license ever issued in a regulated space. And we had a very popular gummy product. We were the only people making gummies until about 2014. And in 2015, I decided that I wanted to create a proprietary shape that helps solve the social concern of, does this product have cannabis in it, or is this a normal product? And so we wanted to create a gummy shaped like a leaf, and also stamped with the THC symbol that was being contemplated in Colorado. And I took a big gamble and went ahead and designed that symbol prior to the regulations being confirmed. I was actually a member of the working group that created that. In a past life, I was a political advocacy person and also a legislative analyst for a couple of different state legislatures. So I was pretty good at predicting how these things work. And what we did was we took that concept of providing the public with what they were demanding, was the ability to understand that something is a cannabis edible and something else is not, and created a very popular brand out of that. I'm a Marine. I was in the United States Marine Corps from 1988 to 1992, so Desert Shield, Desert Storm. And I really wanted to, you know, take that military background and the imagery and iconography of my time in the military and combine it with this newfound freedom that we created in Colorado and has been created in 35 states in the United States and the country of Canada and soon to be the country of Mexico and on and on and on, and just kind of create that branding of, you know, we are not at all ashamed of being in the cannabis business. In fact, it's the greatest thing we've achieved. And we know that consumers feel that way the first couple times they go into the dispensary. It's a unique experience of, I'm having a transaction with a cash register and I'm walking out with a bag to my car and nobody can arrest me. I mean, we really capitalized on that passion that was happening back in 2014, 2015, when we founded this company. And so, you know, I'm lucky enough to work with very talented people, and we created a great logo. And we've created, you know, just a good culture of who we are for our company and for our, you know, company's reputation with the consumers. We resonate with anybody who is a consumer that's a veteran. We resonate with anybody whose parents were in the military or just folks who understand the connection between the companies brand and what's happening around the world right now. So, you know, as we've gained notoriety in Colorado and in Nevada and in Maryland, and now that we're listed in Canada and the United States on the exchanges there, we're really, you know, building on that momentum of the recognition of our branding and our quality and our products, and introducing new products in the markets we're in, and working on expanding our markets into many other states. And, you know, now we recently, just last month, entered into an agreement to create a joint venture for the acquisition of a CBD processing facility, because we are going to take our experience from the THC cannabis space and develop interesting and in-demand products on the CBD market. And what's good for our company is that this is a global marketplace. We're not limited by borders or imaginary, you know, things. This is now legal in the United States, and it can be shipped, it can be received. And so we're very excited about this space. And the way I look at hemp and CBD products is that, you know, for folks who are looking for anti-inflammatory products without the side effects, it's a fantastic way to introduce them to alternative relief, but it's also a fantastic way to introduce adults to the cannabis plant, because hemp is cannabis. It just doesn't have the THC, and get them familiar with the benefits of this product and these types of products that can be created in the plant. And I really believe that, you know, what will happen over time is that the CBD business and industry and products and consumers is just going to make the stigma of cannabis go down overall. And hopefully that will force Congress's hands on the issue of cannabis in the United States and make this the non-issue it really should be.
I couldn't agree with you more, because, you know, until it was outlawed in the U.S. and then the U.S. basically forced the rest of the world to outlaw it, had a history of usage thousands of years. It was then and probably is now still the best treatment for migraine headaches that are particularly females afflicted by. And there's really nothing else better. And in fact, that was a that was brought to the attention of Congress when they were looking at banning cannabis, and they just didn't seem to care about it. So looking at the industry, you got hundreds of cannabis companies, public, private, and investors kind of look at the space and they shake their heads. But obviously, CanAmerica, you've got some advantages here. How do you navigate this landscape of all of these players? Easy entry, relatively speaking, and pretty soon I'm sure we'll see easy exit, even easier exit from the space, right?
Or lots of M&As, right? That's probably the first step, is lots of mergers. We've seen a few, you know, big deals happen in the last 6 months in the Canadian space, and more deals are happening in the U.S. But to your question about, you know, how do you get around the white noise? Every deal sounds like the most exciting opportunity in cannabis, just because any investor who's looking at cannabis is excited about the green rush. And, you know, maybe they're a consumer from 20 years ago and they're thinking about getting involved in this again, or maybe they're just looking at the margins. Maybe they're just looking at the opportunity, and it's tough to try to pick a winner, right? Because there's some clear powerhouses as far as market cap, as far as revenue. And then you've got to, you know, sort out what are the opportunities where this might be the next big thing, or what is, in our case, someone who's been around for a while, who's still operating their business, who didn't sell out. You know, when we went public, the way that we structured this company wasn't for a cash deal, right? So, you know, we made an investment into Frank and I, the co-founder of this company. We made an investment into our future. And I think these are the kind of things that are standard when investors look at other industries, and they should use the same principles when they're looking at the cannabis industry, just not just how slick is the deck or, you know, what is the management look like? And is this an all male company or an all female company or all minority company? These things are important to investors, but the thing that should be the most important to investors is whether or not this company has longevity. And what we've demonstrated by being in this space, our entire team has been working in this space since the beginning of regulated cannabis. So I think what we're counting is about 80 years of experience if you count us all together. And, you know, that really speaks to how this incredibly hard to enter and incredibly hard to create a resonating brand and incredibly hard to continue to operate. You know, that is something that people should be looking at. And I think we're exactly the kind of company for those questions to be answered. You know, we have been operating cultivation, retail, and wholesale manufacturing since we started. Now we are an intellectual property licensing company. That's what we took public. So this stock is not connected to the plant actually in any way, shape, or form, which is why our margins are so good. We create the substrates, meaning the candies, the packaging, the marketing, the hardware, whether it's a disposable pen or whether it's, you know, one of the new products that we're working on releasing in 2019, and provide that to our licensees in the markets that we're in now, where all they have to really do is provide the raw material that they're licensed to do, which is the cannabis, the labor for infusion and packaging, and the distribution. So we're providing manufacturers and wholesalers with a turnkey opportunity to add to their top line and not have to create a brand, right? Sure. It's known as white labeling often in other manufacturing, although there's not enough manufacturing facilities that are engaged in this to say that anybody's truly white labeling. Many folks are, you know, intending to create white label manufacturing. But what this is it's really kind of a headed towards franchising. Once we have full federal legalization, we will then engage as a franchise and give those operators rights to, you know, our intellectual property, our secret techniques, our supply chain. And we're really doing a lot of that now. But because franchises are federally regulated and cannabis is federally prohibited, we can't fully be a franchise. So we have this licensing model. And what it does is it provides us with a royalty piece on the wholesale unit price. And for all of those things that we provide, we are receiving between 25 and 27.5%, depending on the market and the prices in the market. So you can imagine that without all of the staff for cultivation and all of the staff for marketing, I'm sorry, for manufacturing and all of the staff for distribution, even though our slice off of the products that are being made and distributed in these markets is, you know, 25-27%, our margins are incredibly high. And that's simply because we control the supply chain. So we focused for years on making sure that we had the absolute best deals and the best quality in anything that we were acquiring for our finished products. And now that's what we are passing on to our licensees, is all of those relationships through this agreement. And it's really something that it's just catching on with operators. I think once investors understand what this is and the differences between, say, a chain of hundreds of retail stores and their revenues and our concept and our revenues, once they actually look at, okay, but what's the P&L say, and what's the revenue, you know, versus the margins, and what's the amount of debt that's being acquired in that business? Like, we become very attractive to somebody who's not looking for a quick entry and a quick exit into the cannabis space. People who want to make good bets on long-term, you know, companies that have created a recognizable brand, have quality in their products, and have that resonance with the consumers. You know, for folks who care about that, we're a great opportunity for them to do so, because we're really undervalued because folks don't know what to make of it, right? It's new. Yeah. And sure, we don't have tens of thousands of square foot of space. So it's not comparable for those investors for, say, the last couple of years of what the company represents versus what some of these other companies represent. So sure, I think, you know, we're on the rise in our expansion. We're jumping right into hemp at the right moment. And, you know, we've almost completed our first acquisition in hemp, and we're just in the due diligence phase. So yeah, I expect that to be fully acquired sometime in March. And, you know, once we're done with that one, we move on to the next one, create our big manufacturing facility, and start distributing products, you know, in 2019, not only across the United States, but the whole world. So it's a mouthful. It's a lot to process for investors, but this is the type of elevated business model that's happening in cannabis and will continue to happen. We won't be the only people doing this. You know, when you think about brands that are that started in Colorado or started in Washington, and they want their brand in other places, traditionally, they bought real estate, they bought all the equipment, they paid for everything. You're talking $8 to $10 million for a manufacturing facility in every state. I don't have to do that. If someone has created a facility, but they haven't yet figured out the right brand or the right product line, all they need is that facility and staff. I'll bring them products, brands, verticals, marketing, whatever it may be. So, you know, as people learn this, because more and more markets are opening up, which means more new businesses and new companies are being formed, this makes sense to people.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. And speaking of the company, what does your financial position look like these days?
Well, I think, you know, our cash and reserves is well over $1 million. Our market cap, you know, still hovers right around where we opened. We haven't really made any big announcements since October when we went onto the exchange, because we've been head down trying to create all these new opportunities, which don't happen overnight. But there's a lot of news coming. And, you know, so I think we're somewhere in the vicinity of $35 to $40 million valuation based on our market cap. I think our float, for those of you who understand those kind of terms, is about 14 million shares. And our debt is original debt of $3.5 million that once we close out our original raise, we closed the first tranche and we're looking to close the rest of the raise here. And in the very near future, our debt will be wiped out. That's part of that raise that we press released last month, and we're looking forward to closing on. And from there, you know, this is why we went public, was so that we would have that opportunity to have something of value to be able to raise money to do more things instead of the traditional route with cannabis companies working with private equity and, you know, having all of those kinds of challenges and conversations and determining who owns what and who controls what. This is just so much easier because we just, you know, create a great plan, put that out to the investors, create a public raise, and then go out and execute on that plan. And I'm very satisfied with, you know, what we've been able to accomplish just since the middle of October, which actually we went on the exchange the day before Canada legalized, went fully rec. So that was pretty exciting. I was in Toronto for their first day of recreation, which was so underwhelming compared to Colorado.
Anticlimactic.
There were just hundreds of thousands of people getting high on the public property between the state capitol and city hall. I mean, it was a moment in time. And honestly, I think since then, this has become more mainstream, which is the goal, right? That is the goal, is for the stigma of cannabis to not have those Nixon era, attachments of
it's crazy
racist and bigoted ideas of who's a cannabis consumer. And it's happening fast. I mean, when you compare it to alcohol, that was over 70 years ago, right?
I know.
And it's part of the fabric of our society. Now, it is not going to be 70 years before cannabis is just something that people do. Soccer moms get together, and instead of glasses of wine, they all have an edible or share a joint or any of the new types of products that are coming out. I mean, it's freedom for choice in medicine, and it's freedom for choice in consumption. That's why we created the brand of the free, is because it's absolutely reflective of what's happening.
And that is such a great point, which we'll get into a little bit more. But I should mention, I'd be remiss, that you're listed on the CSE, Canadian Securities Exchange, under the symbol CANA, and you're on the OTC under CNNXF. And we should also mention, of course, your website, which we'll mention again, and you'll see it in the show notes. So don't worry about that. The website is canamericabrands.com. That's can with two N's, americabrands.com. So a couple more questions here. Obviously, no one person builds a company. You build companies with teams. What does your team look like, Dan?
That's a very good question and a very good point. I wouldn't be, able to create something that had value without the folks that are part of the team. So I'll start with upper management. I'm the CEO, a member of the board of directors. Co-founder Frank Falconer is the chief operating officer and also a member of the board of directors. Frank owned an edibles company in the early years, and then he worked with the company that I was an owner of before I formed this one with Frank. So, we've got many years of owning and operating cannabis regulated businesses. Neither one of us ever operated in the non-regulated industry. So our experience is early in the legal market and lengthy, and that creates value for partners that we work with that are just getting into the industry. My wife is our licensee director. So she is the number three. And why that's a number three position is because it's very regulated, compliance oriented, and then service oriented. My wife's experience is 25 years in compliance with higher education, which is actually much more complex than marijuana laws because there's privacies and other things. And then our chief scientist, Austin Sims, he is a biochemist, and his experience is deep in the industry and out of the industry. And how it works is, we start to brainstorm on a new product, and basically everything I say, this would be a great product for us to make, I can make that, just give me I need this and this, and next thing we're making gel caps, or we were making inhalers 4 years ago before it caught on, and we decided that the inhaler market would probably be too expensive for the consumer. And I think that's what we've seen, is that products like that's really where our expertise comes in, is what has legs in the marketplace. Just because it's new and cool doesn't mean that people are going to buy it more than once. And so, we made the decision not to jump into the inhaler market, and I think it was a good one. There's inhalers out there. They don't move a lot. They're very expensive. And it's just so I don't know, so medicinal that while first glance, some product like that looks like it'd be perfect, at the end of the day, there's definitely part of the culture of consuming cannabis that wants something, whether that's a confection, whether that's a dab, whether that's a joint, whether that's straight flower, whether it's some kind of drink additive. And that's where we have Joe Bancheri is our brand manager. He comes to us from the telecom industry. So lots and lots of years of working with big, big companies. And now what he's doing is he's managing the brand positioning in the States and working with our licensees to make sure that everything they need to sell the maximum volume of the product is there. And then, of course, our financial team. You know, I couldn't do this without my chief financial officer, John Morrison. And our board is made up of fantastic people. Nin Casual is from PMG. And I mean, we just, you know, we've got really quality folks. Pat Gray is from the IT industry, and Jordan is also from the financial industry. So we really feel like our team, our executive team, has all the bases covered. And then any of the folks that help us with training and executing, getting new products out into the field are all very qualified too. But we've got a large executive team, and I think just a tremendous knowledge base on everything we're trying to do, navigate the banker world in Canada and the U.S., right? We're covered there. Navigate the consumer demand. We're covered there. Navigate product development. Covered there. Navigating compliance, both for us and for our licensees, to make sure the products and things we make and the way we market it are not violations of the law. I mean, it's a very deep knowledge base, and that's just part of the business, right?
That's every business has its special quirks and requirements, and the better you master them, the better off the company is going to be and the better its chances of success. Finally, the billion-dollar question, and I know you really can't answer it, but when does Washington come to its senses and at least take cannabis off the controlled substance, the Schedule A dangerous narcotics list? I mean, it's absurd that it's there.
So it's such a good question. And, you know, I think as a leader of a primary company, the answer I want to give you is, man, I think it's happening soon. But as a former, you know, political advocate and member of the process of politics at the state level, I just don't. I mean, these guys can't agree where the bathrooms are at Congress, right? Like, you know, how are they going to come to terms on a complex issue like cannabis? You know, hemp was lucky to have had some resolution fairly easy. However, I think the thing that folks didn't think about, the unintended consequences, is now they've added the United States Department of Agriculture and the United States Food and Drug Administration directly into their businesses, right? Yeah. That's part of what has happened by it being in the Farm Bill. So what that does is add bureaucratic complexities. And I think they're fairly easy to navigate, unlike cannabis, because we're not talking about an intoxicant. That's my concern. Not so much when Congress does something. I think it's inevitable. It's what's the right political moment for them, right? When there's, a need based on polling. Will it be Trump? Will it be the next president? Will it be Congress? But the question is really, what will they do? Descheduling would be the best for the existing businesses in all of these different markets in the state. Just take it off of descheduling, make it somehow connected to the States' Rights Act, and allow the states to choose for themselves. But government is more complicated than that. Yeah, and my guess
that would be too easy.
Is they're going to want all these protections, and they're going to want all these things. And, you know, the funny thing is child resistant packaging. When we first came out in 2011, there was no such thing in the industry. There's a doctor on TV talking about my products in my former company specifically. And, you know, because they were confections and how they needed to be in opaque bags and child resistant protection. So we jumped on board, worked with the Rocky Mountain National or Rocky Mountain Poison Control Center and the Children's Hospital to determine what exactly do you want and what the problem will be if this goes into some sort of bureaucratic system of legalization at the federal level. Is we are filling up dumps with non-biodegradable millions and millions and millions of packages in just the state of Colorado, right?
I know.
Much less everything else. And now the EPA, right, once this is something that all these government agencies are weighing in on, will want to have a say. And so all of the models that exist now might have to change in order to have some sort of child resistant biodegradable packaging. I don't know. Right. But it's the unintended consequences of going too fast where sometimes these things happen. And believe me, I want this to go as fast as possible, but they're not going to do what I want. Right. They're going to do something that gives them the ability to say, I gave you cannabis. And for those of you who are against cannabis, I put roadblocks in place. That's why it's so expensive right now, is that's what the states have done, is they've said, oh, we'll let you have cannabis, but it's going to be really hard to do. And so mom and pop, unless they have a rich uncle or access to private equity, they can't get into the business. And that's that's just going to get worse on federal legalization. No doubt. We're lucky to be here in this moment, positioned as we are now. And it's just kind of the natural transition. But for me, it's not the when, it's how. How are they going to do it, and what's the impact going to be?
Yeah, that is the question. You know, when you're dealing with government, often they act and they make the problem worse than it was when they started, or they create a problem where there was none before. They're masters at doing that. Well, we're gonna have to wrap it up now. But hey, if you're interested, I would suggest you go take a look at the website, canamericabrands.com. That's C-A-N-N, americabrands.com. Symbol on the Canadian Securities Exchange is C-A-N-A. On the OTC, it's C-N-N-X-F. These are really exciting times, Dan. We wish you the best of luck, and hopefully we'll be along for the ride.
Thank you. And thank you to your listeners for tuning in. And, you know, I'd love to come back sometime when we've got more updates. I really appreciate your time.
Yeah, we'll definitely have you back. And thanks so much for coming on. Good luck.
Thank you.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.